Welcome to the Tim Fowler Show, where production is paramount and we discuss the tools, time, and people associated with getting jobs done and making a profit. On today's episode of the Tim Fowler Show, we will be talking about the CG&S way with the help of special guests Sarah Haddon and Nathan Morris of CG&S Design Build in Austin, Texas. Alongside Tim Fowler, I'm your co-host, Greg Wallach. Here is the Tim Fowler Show.
Hey everyone, Tim Fowler here, and welcome to another episode of the Tim Fowler Show. You know, we start every show by asking for ideas, and I'm starting to get a few more coming in, so I'd love to hear from you. And again, if you like the show, I'd love to hear that too. Tim@remodelersadvantage.com. So we often hear people say things like, that's just the way that we do it. Or maybe you've had a boss that said something like, it's my way or the highway. Well, neither one of those is what we're talking about today. The company that we have on as guests has worked really hard, and I've been associated with this company during this whole process of building this thing that they call the way. They call it the CG&S way. And I don't know everything that it means to the company, and that's really what we're going to try to find out today, share that with you. But I suspect, and maybe this is a little funny and maybe I got it right, but I suspect there's at least three things going on. Number one, I think the way becomes a guide for making decisions that's not just a random decision. In other words, there's a point behind a decision. I think maybe it becomes like the arbitrator of standards at times. And I kind of envision it being like a battle anthem. And I don't know if that's the right term or not, but it's kind of like they get together and somebody goes like, make sure you follow the way, you know, and everybody in the room knows what they're talking about without having this long drawn out discussion about what the way is. And so whatever it is, Greg and I have heard these two guests say the CG&S way so many times that we decided we just need to get them on the podcast and find out what it really means to them. So Greg, let's get started.
You bet, Tim. CG&S Design Build in Austin, Texas is a residential design build firm that has been in business for over 65 years, focused more on renovations than new builds. Sarah Haddon is the design manager at CG&S. This is her 10th year. She started as a project architect and was given the opportunity to manage the design studio about 5 years ago. She is a member of the Remodelers Advantage Design Manager Roundtables. Nathan Morris has also been with CG&S for 10 years. He started out as a project manager and moved into the production manager role 7 years ago. He is really proud of where the team is now and the direction they are heading. He is a member of the production manager roundtables here at Remodelers Advantage. Sarah and Nathan were instrumental in bringing the CG&S way to fruition. They are both very proud of the team and the great improvements to their processes. They are seeing the results of a whole lot of hard work. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right, so let's just jump right in. Sarah, just give us a little bit more information about CG&S, what you guys do, maybe a little bit about the production system. I know you're on the design side, but you know what the company does, just so that the listeners can kind of identify with who you are.
Sure. So like Greg said, we've been around for over 65 years. We were started as a construction company by our current owner's father. And we became a design build company about 30 years ago when our principal architect joined the family business and then started the design studio. The company's always been owned by family. The most recent ownership transition happened about 5 years ago with one of three owners retiring. And the remaining two owners are a husband and wife team, also part of Remodelers Advantage, of course, and the owners groups. Our company has just under 40 employees. We typically have 20 to 25 projects in production at any given time. And our average project size is just north of 600K.
Annual volume might be?
I was just going to say, we just completed our best year ever. We grossed over 18 million in 2023.
All right. Well, big company. When you said 20 to 25 jobs, I wrote it down really quick going on a time. And I went like, you have to have a way. If you got that many jobs going, you have to have a way. So Nathan, give us a rundown. I mean, how do you describe the CG&S way to somebody who just maybe doesn't know your company or doesn't know that kind of process? Well, how do you describe it?
Sure. I have the informal way of describing it, but I'm going to go with what I wrote down earlier. The CG&S way is a project development based on agile or self-organizing a collaborative project teams. It's loosely based on the Scrum project management system that was written by the Sutherlands about like the art of doing twice the work in half the time is the name of the original book we started with, Scrum. But each project team has people that is needed to design and build the projects. And for all of our projects, there are four core internal members for every team: sales, design, estimating, and production. We also add the fifth team member, which is the client themselves. The system was designed to minimize not my job siloed thinking, to maximize, you know, more of a collaborative crossover communication. For example, the CG&S way, in the CG&S way, the project manager advises designers and the estimators on smart construction methods, realistic labor hours, or required scheduling during the design process. So we're trying to, this is really pre-construction methodology. The high focus in pre-construction. Most of our projects have five developmental phases: sales, discovery, concept, final design, and then finally production. Work in any phase is organized in a cycle that we call a sprint. So we're working in these small sprints to achieve the main goal, breaking it down. There are various team members within each sprint, culminating with an increment of useful work delivered to the client. So we just try to, like, what are our deliverables? Let's work on those. And in every sprint, there's new deliverables. And we just keep repeating that process until we have a project developed. We learn as much as we can as soon as possible. This allows us to change course quickly if necessary. Again, the whole team is involved. We know what's going on. The CG&S way decreases timelines, reduces design dropouts during the design process. It minimizes errors and omissions, and hopefully maximizes our net profit to create an all for one and one for all kind of culture as far as the team goes.
Yeah. So just kind of a little bit more information on it. You talk about teams. And so are there teams like of four people that always work on a project together, or do you shuffle the, like, a different designer with a different project manager? How do those teams work?
Yeah. Sarah, if you want to take that one.
Sure. We do shuffle people around. It depends on when a project comes in, who's available to do it, but everyone, like you were saying earlier, Tim, you thought it was probably we had standards and, you know, right, a way, the way is kind of, you know, scripted all the way through the project. So it doesn't really matter who is on the team. Everyone knows their responsibilities in their deliverables, and they can refer back to our standard documents to, if they ever have a question, like, I don't know what I'm doing, well, how do I do this page or this piece of it? They can go back and look at that. And because we switch teams up, because I know a lot of other, you know, companies will just keep their core teams together on every project. Because we switch teams up, if everyone follows the standards, then that makes it still very, I'm trying to think of the right word. It's like very smooth.
Okay.
You know, there's nothing out of the ordinary. Everything is expected, even though it's might be on one project, a project manager might be working with one architect, and on another, it's a different architect, but the results are the same in the end.
So Sarah, when you talk about, Nathan mentioned deliverables for each sprint, I think was the way that he mentioned that. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example of a sprint and what, maybe from the design side, what would be a deliverable that would be achieved at the end of that sprint?
Sure.
Or maybe a couple of them.
Yeah. So every sprint that we do, the end result is always a client meeting. So we're always working towards getting to the in front of the client and getting information to them so they can make decisions and we can move forward. But within each sprint, we have a set number of meetings, right? Okay. We always start out the sprint with a team download meeting where we talk about, hey, this is what happened with the client. These are the changes they made. This is how we're going to move forward. And we kind of, as a team, agree on our schedule. Okay, I need 2 weeks to do the design. Estimating needs a week to do estimating. And then we're going to get back to the client again. So we have the sprint planning meeting / team download meeting. Then we have an estimate or design to estimating handoff meeting. So that's when we're delivering everything we need to the estimators so that they can put pricing together. After they're done with that, we have an estimating to design upload meeting. So they come back with the budget. We kind of hash it out. And, you know, as always, we say, that's so expensive. Can you get the price down? And then there's like a little bit of scurrying around. And we all agree on what we're going to present to the client, and then we go to see the client.
So, Nathan, are these sprints kind of scheduled the same every time? In other words, I know some companies will actually, they'll meet with the client and they'll say, we need 9 meetings before we start your job. The first one will be here, second one will be here, and they've got them all scheduled out. Do these fall into that kind of category for you, or is it more when you get done with one meeting, then you plan for you schedule the next one?
Oh, Sarah probably can answer this more because like this is in the design side of things. But yes, basically it's a set 3 weeks is our goal. Every 3 weeks to have this turnaround, like she mentioned. What are we delivering? What are we talking about? Bid it back out, the new budget range, then go meet with the client, make sure we're tracking correctly. And then we come back and just continue doing that as we develop the project further down the road.
Yeah, that's great.
I was just going to add, we do, for every project, we develop a project timeline and we share that with the client. So they actually can see what we're doing behind the scenes with our different meetings, and they can expect when we'll be able to meet with them again. And we do try and schedule those client meetings out well in advance so that they're available. We work around vacations and, you know.
And so this project timeline does not start on the day of demo, right? It starts, I just want to clarify that because so many people don't think about that first design time as part of the project.
Yeah.
They think of it as, you know, it can be whatever it is. Ooh, did I say that out loud? It can be whatever it is. And then construction has to be on a schedule. And so You're on a schedule from the day the client's interacting with you.
Oh, yeah. It starts the CGNS way starts in sales. So yeah. It's the minute the client agrees to work with us, that's when the timeline is implemented. It is adjusted on a, you know, per client basis, but
yep.
It's generally the same for each project.
Okay. So, Nathan, I've known you for a while, and I know maybe I shouldn't say this in public, but I know there's been frustration in the distant past about the way things work. So just tell us why this was put together. Why did you guys go to the trouble of really focusing and getting the way, you know, documented and in place? What was the cause?
Yeah, absolutely. And you definitely have been with me for most of the ups and downs through the production roundtables. But prior to the CGNS way, we were producing projects in an archaic way that was established before this generation of employees were here. With the ownership transition, the senior partner that retired and the new owners, Dolores and Stuart, took over. They recognized that there was a need to set the company up for a long-term success. We needed a system in place that we could hopefully scale. It seems very scalable. And for several years prior to this, we have been like consistently missing our targets, duration, net profit, like all of our goals we're missing. We're struggling to try to achieve them. So we definitely tried to hit our targets, but we repeatedly fell short. So intuitively, we felt that there was a better way to run projects in order to meet or exceed our goals. Instead of spinning our wheels and we tried to fit and try and trying to fix some old broken system, we all agree, like, let's just start over, like scrap the old system and let's just start over. And that's where we start. That's where we got here. And the leadership team recognized that, that we needed to have a better opportunity to improve our communication with our core members. The way projects were run previously, our departments were extremely siloed. We had this kind of like left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing until it was too late. Does this sound familiar to people out there? So we put teams together of people in each department, sales and design, estimating, production, to outline this development system. When we started on the CGNS way, we just had the core people start working on the draft or an outline of the CGNS way or what we thought it was going to be based on the Scrum methodology. We wanted to make sure that each team member had a voice. And that the old system that wasn't working, we could brainstorm about that and improve on this new system as a team. So again, remove the silos.
Yeah. So Sarah, I understand why project managers, lead carpenters, production managers want everything lined up. Was there a trouble getting design on board? Because that's a creative process. And I've heard people say, look, design, you know, takes what it takes. And I say that again? I did, didn't I? But, you know, the idea that it's creative process, we can't lock it into a 3-week time frame. We can't, you know, and so was it tough kind of for yourself or even for the designers to kind of get on board with this idea of a more regimented way of doing things?
Well, yes and no. I mean, when we started developing the CGNS way, we, like Nathan said, we kind of, we brought the four components together and we talked through like what wasn't working and what, how we needed to change it. And we started sort of outlining the new process. And that was done at the, I guess, at the leadership team level, if you want to define where in the organization that was happening. But we did bring the idea, the outline, the framework to the entire company, and we asked for their buy-in so that they could also have a voice and say, like, this is dumb. Why are we doing it this way? Or, hey, you know, this sounds like a great idea. I also have these opinions, and maybe we should do it this way. And that helped get everybody on board. Because they knew they weren't, you know, if they came to me or Nathan or, you know, our other team members who were developing and saying like, this doesn't work, they knew they weren't going to be penalized for it. They knew that they could speak up without, you know, without negative feedback and whatever.
It sounds like to me, you guys use Scrum to introduce Scrum to the team. Was there an iterative process? I mean, that's one of the things around Agile, especially this iterative process where you share a little bit, you get some feedback, you share a little bit more, you get some feedback. Was that the case?
Yeah, I mean, we use the CGNS way, or sorry, we use the Scrum book and the idea of it as our baseline, but it was really developed as a software development system. And as we all know, construction is not the same every time. There's so many different variables that we use the term Scrum and the term Sprint pretty loosely. The idea being, or the like the basis of everything being, we want to be as communicative as possible, not just with it or from us to the client, but within our teams as well. So, you know, not only do I know as the designer what the estimator is doing, the estimator knows what I'm doing, the project manager is also involved. He knows what's happening. He knows what to expect. And there's no longer, you know, it used to be that we would totally develop project and the production team would never see it until after we signed the construction contract. And what we started doing now is bringing the PM on the team sort of 2/3 of the way through design to really get a handle on it, get a handle on the budget and the scope and everything, and really get bought into the project so that when he's ready to go out and start demo and building the project, he's not sort of shooting in the dark. He really knows what's going on.
So I'd like to point out that MS Project was also developed as a software tool. So that's, you know, we've taken that as well, which I think is great. So as you're implementing this, any particular sticking points, things that were difficult to get through?
Yeah, definitely. when the scrum or the principal came to us like that, it was really for the development, you know, pre that contract signing. And we were like, how does this look like in production? So we went a long way in the CGS way development up into the production contract signing. And we didn't know what it looked like in production. So that was sort of hard. Like, how do we get this? We had all this information going towards the PM. Now the PM needs to come back with information to get through the project as it's being constructed. So just understanding our involvement, productions that is, was initially difficult to understand. But this became really clear when we decided to add the project manager at final design, how much more pre-construction information we're getting, like just missing general conditions or logistics of the job. Because estimators look at it one way. And then when the PMs actually show up, it's like, I need heavy equipment. I need to do this. I got to do that. And that wasn't discussed in the past. And so we would be short just in some of those materials or those budget line items. But we even turned some of our old systems like weekly meetings, site meetings, tri-weekly meetings. That's now part of the CGNS way. And there's recap notes and agendas and more communication. It's more robust. And it sounds like a lot of extra work, but the payoffs are just amazing when you go back and look at the previous years that are related to the CGNS way's implementation.
Is there anything that, I guess, particularly on the production side, Nathan, that you can point to that your project managers got or the results for them that they didn't expect that was actually really positive? In other words, they went like, I thought this was going to be good, but this is great because it does this. Is there anything like that that you could point to specifically?
Sure. I'm one of those exact individuals that are like, whoa, this is really awesome. After it's like, this is a big lift. But I see the payoff and the PMs do too. So like Sarah was mentioning, the PM and I would not even know about the project till like the walkthrough, the initial walkthrough of the job when we do our after contract signing, we meet the client, we walk through the job. And that's where like figuring things out on the fly. Them bringing into final design, which is months and months before that contract signing, they already know the client. They've already met them. They're part of the recon now. They met the subs. So it's just so much better. The only thing in production I had to switch was they can't take all of the standard capacity of a PM because he has this extra capacity he has to use for the pre-construction side.
Right.
So I might have to take one project away from the three or four they're typically used to run and give them that time to be a part of the CGNS way.
Yeah. So basically they're still running four or five projects. Just one of them hadn't started yet or two of them haven't started yet.
Exactly right. And we're building those controls earlier.
Sarah?
I was just going to add two things to that. One is now the PMs are kind of saddled with the same thing that designers were saddled with previously and continue to be, where we design stuff, but then we also have to do construction administration. So they're building stuff, but they also have to participate on the early side. And then the second thing I was going to say is I think something, if I could put words in the production team's mouth, also something that they seem to appreciate is they're starting projects with budgets that cover everything they need in construction. And they have the ability before construction signing to sit down. We have specific meetings where we sit down and we go line by line through the budget and we compare it to the bids and we make sure that everything is there so that they're not left, you know, trying to build a project for something that's, you know, we don't have budget for.
Yeah. I'll also say like the PMs also have a word on what vendors or subcontractors might be on that project. So, you know, every PM has their own relationship with the same subs the whole company uses, and some are better than others. And so there's an opportunity where like this project is so high end or over the top that this person is probably not suited for this particular one. So PMs have a say on who's going to be used. And that makes their job easier a few months down the line. So again, we love that in production.
So anybody that's listening to this knows that over the years there are times when we're recording these podcasts and I start hearing the general public out there saying, "Come on, dude, it is not that great. It can't be perfect." And so what I want to ask is, and I'm familiar, you know, I've seen so many companies with systems and they put them in place and then somebody doesn't want to do that. You know, it's like, we don't have to do that on this project. It's just a small amount of plumbing, or it's just a small amount of, you know, electrical or something like that. So what do you do? Sarah, why don't you take this first? What do you do when someone tries to stray away from the way? How do you keep the company focused on that? Because our natural, I think even for production staff, our natural tendency is to stray away from a system and wing it a little bit. So how do you deal with that?
Yeah, definitely. So I have a couple of thoughts on that. One is our system kind of has built-in redundancy in it, right? So it's based on accountability. So if someone's not doing their job, the team, because we are face-to-face so often, you get called out. And the teams have learned to very easily self-correct and get back on the path. And because we've now been doing this for several years, and like I mentioned, we just had our best year ever in terms of volume, that itself has proven to the staff that it works. If you follow the method, if you make sure everyone, not only internally, but the client as well, is well informed about what's going on, if you own your mistakes, if you're just willing to help the team in any way that you can to get this project through all the way to the end where we have ecstatic clients and, a beautiful project to photograph and use in our portfolio and stuff. Over time, we've seen less and less of anyone at the company saying, well, why are we doing it this way? I don't want to do it this way. I want to do it the old way. Because the old way wasn't working. We weren't meeting our goals. It affects everybody. If you're not meeting your goals, you're not getting bonuses. You're not, everyone's unhappy. Now it's like, we're excited to come to work. We like what we're doing. We like the teams we're in, and it's working. So
I'd like to say I think it also exposes other departments to other departments of what they're doing. I think there's a greater appreciation from the production department has a greater appreciation of what design goes through that customer service and all these meetings. We had no idea. We're just out here putting sticks together and trying to match this design. We don't know the heartache of what they go through or the difficulty. Right. And then, of course, there's the clients or if they're willing to participate in the process and so on. But I think the organic side effect of this is a greater appreciation of each other and what we do and to see other people in their positions and how much hard work they actually put together. So
So you mentioned the client and we're going to wrap up here in a minute. But you mentioned the client. Do you have any way of vetting the clients so that you can guarantee that they'll stick with the way? I see lots of smiles and laughs there. So for those of you who don't see the video, Sarah, do you want to take a crack at that?
Yeah, sure. No one has the ability to pick and choose clients, right? There's people that come to us and they want to do a project with us. We do have a pretty strict vetting process when we start a job, and we want to make sure that the client is the right fit for us, in terms of budget, in terms of the scope of their job, all of that stuff. But we rarely, if ever, come across a client who makes it through the sales processes and into design and construction that doesn't appreciate the CGNS way. Okay. And we do feel like it's important to educate our clients on how we do the work as well, because we need their buy-in to stay on our timelines. We need their buy-in to make sure the project stays on budget, stays, within the scope that they want built, all of that stuff.
And I'd also say that we're with the clients more often and for that longer. So production gets to meet these clients well before the contract sign. We're at their house. They're asking us questions like, do I have to clear my garage out for this addition you're putting above it? It's like, yes. those questions, it makes them feel good to know that the guy building the project in 6 months or a year is talking to them now. And so you're already getting this, building this relationship, and you can already tweak hey, this person's main goal is they only care about wallpaper, nothing else. So let's focus on making sure that particular item is considered most above all. We have a longer history with our clients before we start jobs, before we didn't have that.
Yeah, I was on a webinar the other day and we were talking about, how companies grow and the size that you are. And I mentioned a company in the greater Boston area that I think is around 30 million now. And the thing that I mentioned in that webinar was that I believe that growth is really dependent on control. And it sounds to me like you guys now control the process as opposed to letting the client control it, the trades control it, the, you know, anybody else in the process. And I think that's a huge key to really doing well in this business, but also to be able to grow to a point where, you know, it's a very sizable size company. So if each one of you would just take a minute or so and kind of maybe last little bit of advice to the listeners out there about this, and then we'll wrap up.
Sure. I'd like to say that, like, I'm a hard sell on a new process. Like, I got to see some results. And so if I'm the hardest customer and I'm sold on it, I can sell this product to my guys, right? Or to the production department. But buy-in and implementation go hand in hand. So implementing something is always hard, but if you show them the value, show them the quickest first example of, look how much better this one, you know, supervision line item is in your budget's better because you are part of that development. And so if you keep showing these little things, then you're going to start showing annually net profit and quarter over quarter better performance, all based on the way. So be open-minded and try to work on the buy-in.
Got it.
Yeah.
And then I would say to anyone out there who's trying to work on their process to implement something like this, or just some sort of major shift in your process or delivery system, you have to have a ton of patience and a lot of perseverance, because it takes time to see the results. I mean, we started working in this in 2019. We brought it to the company in 2020. Granted, it was pandemic and like that messed with timelines anyway, but, you know, 2 years later down the road, we started seeing the results. And then this last year was just like, wow, this is great. We're doing really well. Everyone's on board. And we can see a bright future ahead, but it took a long time. So you definitely have to have patience and perseverance.
Well, that's fantastic. Sarah, Nathan, thank you so much for being on. I've got a page of notes over here. Greg and I are going to have a little give and take, but really appreciate your giving some of your time today just to help our listeners see, I think, some great opportunity.
Thank you so much, both of y'all. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. It was fun.
So, Tim, you know, I've had the opportunity to spend time with both of these people, and they're both thoughtful. They're both hardworking. What did you learn today?
Oh, you know, there are so many things that I will say, Greg, there are things that I already knew, but they were reinforced. And just the whole idea of when a company wants to really develop systems, get everybody involved. I mean, do not do a leadership retreat, come back and hand down the edict to everybody that this is the way you're going to behave from now on. Because you see, you heard them talking about, yeah, the leadership team initially said, we got to do something. But at the same time, they said, everybody, we want your input, your feedback on how this really works. I love the team thing. I love the idea that every project gets a team of people to work on it. It's not just estimating and sales or design. Production's brought into that team to give feedback. You know, we've been harping on that for years and years and years. Get them involved, get them involved. And so this is a great example of that. I love the whole thing about accountability and built-in redundancy so that you're sure that the system stays in place in a way that, you know, it's actually being, you know, followed through on. And I think I made the comment originally that, you know, with that many projects going, you have to have something where it's under control. Otherwise, it just spins off and, you know, you're in trouble.
So I hated sprints in football practice or track, but I think that, you know, sprints are a really good business thing. Lots of, you know, you have this short burst of energy. I mean, it's a sprint and you can get a lot done in that. I also wrote down redundancy. I thought that's an excellent tool. And one thing Nathan brought up was this sort of de facto or byproduct was this cross training where people got to see different departments in action and really understand, you know, what goes on.
Yeah. So the other thing, you know, and I asked specifically about the deliverables, I love, and it's something that I have really gotten kind of on, I'm on the bandwagon of really getting sales design estimating on some kind of a schedule, if you will, if you want to call it that, but having it, having deliverables at the end, like this is what we're trying to achieve by this date and then by this date. And I see it in our estimating seminar that we do. The companies that are on with that, they have the same thing going on. Other companies within the Remodelers Advantage Network, the same idea that we're getting the whole team and we're thinking about the job from the first day we meet the client and convince them to work with us right on through till the very end of construction as one job. This is not a job to sell it and then a job to build it. This is one job, and the whole job has deliverables that are on some kind of a time frame. And I love that, that aspect of it.
That's excellent. All right. Well, once again, we'd like to thank Sarah Haddon and Nathan Morris of CGNS Design Build in Austin, Texas, for joining us. And thank you for listening to another episode of The Tim Fowler Show.
And remember, at The Tim Fowler Show, we're working hard, even though I said it twice during this podcast. Oh, my goodness. To eliminate that nasty phrase, it is what it is, from your vocabulary.
This has been another episode of The Tim Fowler Show. Would you like to hire Tim or myself to help fast track your growth? Please send me an email, greg@remodelersadvantage.com, for more information about our production manager and design manager roundtables, to get more information about consulting for your team, or if you have ideas for the podcast. Please subscribe to the show and comment on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for listening.